Welcome back to Discerning Consciousness with your hosts, Mike and Ant-Man.
Hi, everyone.
This episode, we'll be putting social conditioning under the spotlight and seeing what effect that has on the human psyche.
Yeah, I'd just like to add to that, Mike, it's very important to cover the issue of social conditioning because it's the main mechanism by which or through which human consciousness is kept suppressed or at a low level.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to start with a quote, which we often like to do on Discerning Consciousness, and this is from Wikipedia, a definition of social conditioning. It describes social conditioning is the sociological process of training individuals in a society to respond in a manner generally approved by the society in general and peer groups within society. The concept is stronger than that of socialisation, which is the process of inheriting norms, customs and ideologies. So an interesting quote there.
Yeah. Kind of like summarises roughly what we're going to be talking about today. Mm. But we're going to be going into a few subjects in a bit more detail.
Mm. So we're going to start by talking about social conditioning in terms of the animal aspect of our psychology.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, we are still animals, even though we like to think we're above them. But that animalistic part of us that is a social animal.
Our drive to belong, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we try to fit in as much as possible.
Mm.
We're just built that way.
Mm. So our greatest concern or fear, which is biologically driven, is that we will be cast outside of the tribe and left isolated.
Yeah, no one likes to feel alone. We all like to feel a part of a group.
Mm. But the corollary to that is that it means that we're quite easy to be manipulated.
Well, that can happen and does tend to happen all over the place at different levels.
Mm.
But it's how we're built at the end of the day. And so if we are manipulated in a way, we only allow ourselves to be manipulated. Mm.
And on this theme of, you know, allowing ourselves to be manipulated, the first point I'd like to pick up on is this idea in which actually it begins social conditioning with how we censor ourselves. So if you think in terms of everyday society, when we operate, we have this fear of talking to strangers. We have this fear of being singled out as a troublemaker. There's certain things within day-to-day society that is commonly accepted that we shouldn't talk about, i.e. politics and religion. So there's these unwritten social norms that we tend to adhere to for fear of being isolated or, you know, cast out.
Yeah, we're afraid to say things to someone in case they reject you for it, you know, they respond badly.
Mm.
There's always that the secret self, as it were, that comes out of being a social animal, but also at the same time being an individual.
Mm. And that could be quite hard to reconcile within ourselves, can't
it? Yeah, especially in a society that's very confined in what it considers allowed behaviour.
Mm. And again, we're speaking from a kind of very British, North European, American model. And I would suggest that there seems to be a lack of social freedom, really.
Well, it's not really that there's a lack of social freedom in what you can do. It's more of a social freedom in how you do it.
Mm.
But within our society, it's more about kind of like making sure you stick to the Western model of being a consumer rather than much else.
Mm. Yeah. So, again, I think we've mentioned this in previous podcasts where the expression of your individuality is through, you know, your consumption rather than your actual real inner being as such.
You want an individual? If you want to be an individual, there's a market for that, and you can look like everyone else in that market.
Yeah, absolutely. So at this point, it might be interesting to consider one of the main mechanisms through which social conditioning occurs, and that's through the family, of course.
Yeah, because as a baby, we have no idea what the world is like, and so we look for our parents, close family, to actually see how to act.
Mm. We model that, don't we? Monkey see, monkey do.
Exactly.
Mm.
And that's the main reason that we have these psychological underpinnings of wanting to fit in. Because it helps us learn. It helps us to be from everyone else.
Mm. And one of the main mechanisms in the family unit which impinges on the child is this idea of reward and punishment, in that material items and perhaps more importantly love is always given on a conditional basis.
Yeah, so if you've been naughty, well, in the old days you definitely got the slap around the ass, but or the back of the leg, whatever it was at the time.
Yeah, sure.
But these days that's almost not allowed, as
no,
it were.
No, sure. So one of the effects of having you know, this idea of conditional love and affection, it creates a division within the child, and then as we grow up in terms of coming into adulthood, in that we see, in order to confirm our own legitimacy as a human being, we're looking to external sources to confirm our own inner being.
Yeah, and we actually look at other people to validate our own beliefs.
Mm, yeah.
Because if you're like someone else, that means that your option is a good option.
Mm, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and to develop this further, it's also interesting to consider that children often are quite intuitive, and they will recognise if the behaviour of their parents is contradictory in some way, and they will feel the urge to obviously speak out and raise this within the family unit. But very often these are uncomfortable truths that adults and parents in particular don't want to hear, so the child will be silenced. It's like, well, you can't say that, that's controversial. So again, this creates a division within the child, and then as they grow into adult life, in that they don't trust their own instincts.
Well, if they're suppressed enough, definitely.
Mm.
But that definitely comes onto what's almost like what's allowed to be talked about and what's not allowed to be talked
about. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, that suddenly relates back to this whole idea of, you know, don't talk about politics and religion because you'll upset people.
Yeah, so it's a division of what's acceptable.
Mm. And furthermore, I would add that one of the effects of social conditioning within the family is that the child grows up to accept hierarchical structures, because that is basically the family unit in essence. So when they go out in the adult world into work, for example, they're just much more accepting of those structures.
Yeah, well, definitely when you're growing up, especially as a kid, you're looking at your parents for everything, so they are your world, you know. Then then it's them who you look to do anything, and especially the parental role will always have charge of that position.
Definitely. There's obviously consequences for living in a society whereby love is conditional. I mean, as we grow up as adults, it's going to affect our psychology. So, I mean, some of the negative things or behaviour patterns that might occur is in terms of passive-aggressive behaviour. We may feel that we lack empowerment in our lives, you know.
Yeah, but it's interesting to note that that almost like has a knock-on effect, because the fact is our parents were brought up like that, so they've got their certain you know, deficiency, yeah?
Yeah.
And then we grow up with it because it's been passed on. It's,
yeah, sure.
And it's the cause of most problems in the world. Everyone's kind of like lacking with what's going on in terms of love and affection.
Yeah, there's this sense that we're not enough. I mean, so we seek it outside of ourselves. And again, this is what drives a lot of consumer culture.
The whole drive to be accepted.
Mm. So the idea of reward and punishment, which we've been talking about, which obviously has quite a lot of negative psychological consequences, that obviously takes place within the education system as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, the education system has a big part to play with it. It kind of like teaches children what to think.
And how to think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they'll always be told what to learn and what's not to learn.
Mm.
And it's where really you start getting the whole kind of like hierarchical structures of like the rest of your life. You know, always look to someone for information.
Yeah.
Always to follow the leader, you know, always to be a member of the class sort of way.
Mm.
You know, they know, you don't.
Mm.
You sit there and listen. Mm.
And also at school, the idea of acceptable ideas, in that you have the curriculum, which is very rigid. So you might have a student that has interesting ideas, but because they go outside of the bounds of acceptable ideas, they can't be expressed.
Yeah.
Which again is another controlling mechanism.
And suddenly they're labelled the troublemakers in the class.
Yeah, sure, yeah. And, you know, with the development of the internet, there's more and more access to interesting and innovative ideas, but it doesn't seem as if the curriculum is moving in that direction.
No, it's still teaching outdated stuff in outdated ways.
Mm.
But it is definitely one of the biggest part, you know, member of the social conditioning clan in a way, because the child's mind is so
pliable, malleable.
Yeah, malleable for for this information, and when you're giving it in such a limited way in a rigid structure, it's kind of like setting them up for the rest of their life in that way. But another really big impactor when it comes to this is also religion.
Yeah, we can't not consider religion in terms of social condition.
I mean, think for the last 2,000 years, what effect it's had on humanity and the dark days that were the Middle Ages.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and obviously that continues to this day with extreme elements within all the monotheistic religions.
With religion, it's always been a big one of kind of like saying what is and isn't allowed.
Yeah.
Not legally, just spiritually.
No.
And if you don't, you'll burn in hell forever.
Yeah. So again, it's a whole rule book of accepted norms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was the biggest one because it played on one of their biggest fears.
Yeah. And of course, back in the day, hundreds of years ago, before people had the ability to research themselves, the word of the religious leader was absolute. You couldn't question that, and you had no means to.
No. And they controlled for so long, and they were so powerful, so they definitely had to be mentioned.
Moving on, it'll be... we can't really talk about, again, social conditioning without considering the role of television in the modern era.
Right. Now, TV is almost the biggest brainwashing tool,
the principal one, isn't it,
there has ever been.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact is that TV is beaming out to billions of people around the world every night, almost in a subtle way telling them what to believe and how to think.
It normalizes certain behavior patterns and sets social norms within behavior. So you can see, in terms of like certain dramas, there'll be representation of certain issues, there'll be, you know, minority groups will be presented in a certain way, and that changes over time, and that implants ideas within the public consciousness. Although the public, as they're viewing these, it's just seen as entertainment. It's not entertainment, it's obviously social conditioning, because it's getting people used to certain ideas, those that are acceptable and those that aren't. I don't know what you think about that, Mike.
Well, I mean, it's called TV programming for a reason.
It's called programming,
So these shows that you watch, kind of like things that are going on there, will tend to lead you, well, it was okay, I saw it on TV, so you'll actually go out and do that. Mm. Other people who have watched it will be doing that too, you know.
Sure.
It kind of like sets the standard for what's acceptable.
The words that spring to mind, it sets the cultural norms within society. Whereas some people believe it's the other way around, that the media expressions like TV are just reflecting the culture. I've always argued that it's actually, no, it's the other way around.
Yeah, because as soon as we see someone else do it, it's like, well, okay, that's fair game now.
Again, it's back to monkey see, monkey do.
Exactly. It's innate in us. Mm. It really is.
So further on this point, in terms of TV, going into TV a bit more, one specific area of TV is the whole idea of celebrity culture.
Yeah, so celebrity culture does drive a lot of people to do crazy things, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think that the popularity around celebrity culture links into this idea of social conditioning, because people don't feel empowered within themselves, again, because they're looking for outside sources. You get this idea of hero worship, worshipping sports stars, worshipping, you know, movie stars, worshipping musicians, you know, because we don't feel enough within ourselves. I think there's an element of that driving that process.
Yeah, so we definitely project onto the other person all our hopes and fears, and, you know, we almost try and experience life through them almost, you know, in a way that we're like trying to constantly get updated about what they're doing and how they're doing it.
And the development of the internet has obviously allowed us to do that. So our favourite, you know, celebrities, we can constantly get updates from their Twitter accounts and Facebook accounts, you know, so...
Which is not always a good thing.
Yeah, and I just need to add to this, I'm not saying that, you know, people who have an interest in individuals like sports stars, musicians and celebrities, necessarily it's always a bad process, but, you know, looking at it from a zoomed out perspective, there is that more negative element.
Definitely, it's easy to happen, it's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
But one interesting point you make about how we're more connected these days.
Yeah.
It's interesting that in the old days, TV was the only source of information.
The only medium, wasn't it?
Yeah, apart from newspaper,
and newspapers,
which is a bit...
and radio.
Yeah, but they were like slower, so...
yeah.
And they didn't have pictures.
No, no.
And we are a very pictorially based society, you know, we see more than any other sense.
Yeah, sure.
So when it comes to what's on TV, it's like the main thing.
Yeah.
Captures more people's attention on a daily basis than anything else.
Captures our imagination, is the expression.
So by that, it controls us more easily.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that since the dawn of the internet and hyper-connectedness, we now have more information at our fingertips through our smartphones, tablets, internet all the time, that it's happening on a larger scale with all that.
Sure, yeah, that's a very interesting point, yeah. So what we're talking about really is social conditioning. What we've been talking about is social conditioning in that it sets certain accepted norms within society that everyone then follows. So it's like a framework, if you like. And underpinning that framework is this idea of language or words that are acceptable and unacceptable. So one that springs to mind, I won't say it fully, but is the C word. It's the one word that you cannot say in modern society.
Yeah.
Still.
No idea why.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, certain societies just have certain words that are on the no-no list. And it's crazy to think that there should be such a thing.
Mm.
In a free and open society, why would there be such limitations?
Mm. Yeah.
But apparently there is, so we know there's a certain control aspect straight away.
Mm.
You know, you're controlling expression by saying you can't use a word.
Yeah. And again, that links back to, as we're brought up to children, you know, it's not acceptable to swear within the family unit. But there's a controlling element of that, because if you look at it from a more broader perspective, it's just a vocalisation. It's just a word. And that does stifle us as human beings and our ability to fully express ourselves if there are certain words that are acceptable and unacceptable.
Yeah. Not only that, I find it's not just the words, but it's the language itself. It's the way in which we use words and tie them together.
Mm.
The way that has changed over the last 100 years gives us what we would call almost our modern tongue.
Mm, yeah.
But in the same way, it is twisted words and phrases in a way that most of the time what we say isn't even grammatically correct.
No, yeah.
But we say them anyway because it's just the way it's done. And
again, so that's an accepted norm within society, but if you actually look at it, it's sort of upside down, back to front thinking.
Yeah, left to right, everything's crazy. So when you actually start analysing the very words you use, it's interesting to see what effect they're having on your life.
Mm, yeah, that's interesting. The use of words links into our next area we're going to talk about, which is a key component, certainly in the modern era, political correctness. Of course, we know that the whole principle of political correctness is that within mainstream modern society now, there's only certain words, phrases, and even like social attitudes that you're able to express. And it's becoming narrower and narrower and narrower over time. And I think Mike and I both agree that that is a deliberate thing, a deliberate process to curtail expression and freedom of expression.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's all done under the banner of, well, it's being nice to everybody.
Yeah, it's done under the banner of promoting minority rights by saying, well, you can't say that about gay people, or you can't say that about ethnic minorities, when actually, really, the real agenda is nothing to do with protecting the rights of minority groups, I would argue, but actually about closing down in a very sort of George Orwell's 1984 way, closing down access we have to words and what we can express.
Is literally double speak in that
way. That's the word I was looking for, thank you Mike. Double speak,
and by that they confine the very consciousness in terms of ways it can think.
And this sort of upside down thinking relates to political correctness. In think of all the minority groups out there who have campaigning for their rights and all the rest of it. And there's this sense in which they don't actually realise that what they're doing is a negative thing, because they're campaigning for all these rights and all the rest of it. But actually, in so doing, they're curtailing people's freedoms. But they're actually thinking they're doing a good thing. You know, in a sense, they think they're promoting democracy and freedom. But I would argue they're actually doing the opposite.
I was going to say, most of political correctness just seems to be in the mode of, well, you shouldn't offend that group.
Yeah, sure.
But the whole thing of being offended is ridiculous, because
it's very subjective. Everyone's like tolerance towards being offended is completely different.
Yeah, what might offend someone won't offend someone else. So
yeah, sure. Yeah,
it is pretty crazy under that premise alone.
Yeah.
But it's a thing, we have to deal with it.
Yeah, it's definitely a tool of social conditioning in that, I mean, I don't know about you, Mike, but I'm, you know, in certain social situation, I think, oh, I better run this by my brain first of all before I open my mouth, because this might offend someone. Not, I don't set out to offend people, but you know what I mean? I still think that...
But it can so easily be done these days.
Yeah, I think we should live in a society whereby people should be more tolerant towards being offended. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, because otherwise...
In a crazy way, yes.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Otherwise, we will live in a society where we have all these, you know, overdeveloped egos. It's like, you can't say that to me, you can't say that to me. And it's... I think that, again, there's a sinister element to that, and that affects our emotional, psychological development as human beings, you know. And it actually, again, it makes us less tolerant. So the ironic thing about political correctness is, actually, I think it makes us less tolerant.
Yeah.
In a way.
Because at the end of the day, we just get annoyed with it.
Yeah, yeah, sure. So moving on from political correctness now, Mike, I think we need to use the C word in a different context. Culture.
And that is culture. Yeah. And the whole idea is culture is our enemy.
Yeah, explain what you mean by that. I've heard that said quite a lot.
Right, so culture is, the end of the day, is like the summation of, you know, your society. It's culture. Mm. How it displays itself, what it does, what's considered right and wrong. Sure. Brief example might be, say, the Spanish with their bullfighting. Yeah. Most people would consider that wrong in the British culture.
In ethical terms.
Yeah. Yeah. But people of the Spanish culture is just like, well, it's just a done thing.
It's what we do.
Yeah. Yeah. But the biggest way to explain how culture can be your enemy would be the perfect example of Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
It was the culture to go with Hitler. It was the culture.
That was the norm.
To believe what he said and go along with it.
Mm.
And it was the culture to be perfectly accepting the fact that millions of people were being slaughtered under his regime.
Mm.
That was the culture. They accepted it
because
of the social conditioning that went on to get that culture in.
Mm, sure.
And by that very nature, it's almost easy to see how culture is our enemy.
Mm.
It's the very thing that, at the end of the day, divides us.
Mm, yeah.
Because even within, say, a culture, you'll have subcultures.
Mm, yeah, which brings in the whole idea of divide and rule, which is, again, one of the key mechanisms by which social conditioning occurs.
Yeah, it's like sport fans. Yeah. Suddenly, oh, you're not supporting the same team as I'm supporting. Right, now we're enemies.
Yeah, yeah. You've got a red shirt, I've got a blue one. We're enemies.
Yeah, so, and that is the biggest aspect that they use and almost against us in a way to keep us down, is that divide and rule within the subcultures.
Mm, yeah. And it's interesting to break apart the word culture, because obviously the main component of the word is cult.
Yeah.
And obviously I would argue, Mike, I don't know about you, it'd be interesting to hear your point of view on this, that actually the mainstream culture is a cult. The system is a cult in and of itself.
Well, it is the biggest cults you find. Because the biggest thing about a cult will be, it will always tell you not to associate with people who aren't in your cult.
Yeah, who are outside.
Yeah. Yeah. For the cults that you're talking about, that you'll hear on the news, will always be the small group of people who are choosing not to speak with society at large.
Sure, yeah.
But society at large will also say, don't speak to them.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's basically like, they're not in our cult.
Yeah, because it's interesting that the mainstream media will present these groups as, you know, being really extremist and intolerant. You know, the ultimate expression of a cult. And yet I would argue the mainstream system is intolerant and, you know, extremist. You know, just in a different way than, say, the BNP or, you know.
It's all got levels within levels of
of
what's going on there.
Yeah. So we also have, worth considering, Mike, is multiculturalism in terms of culture.
Yeah, well, again, like I said, culture is the enemy. With multiculturalism, it's the whole idea that many cultures can coexist peacefully.
Mm.
But what you find is all cultures will generally jar with each other.
Because they'll conflict, because they have different norms.
Yes. And because of these different norms, and generally associated with it different languages,
sure, yeah,
comes a whole confrontation of...
And conflict.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what you find is culture is the very thing that's creating stress and disorder within those societies.
And the interesting thing, again, about multiculturalism, one of the ideas underpinning it is this idea that we're all the same somehow, and I disagree with that. I think that's, again, it's quite a dangerous ideology. As we've already said, all these different cultures have different norms, different ways of expressing themselves. So when they come together, there isn't necessarily this harmony. And again, I think we're being sold a lie in order to uproot people from their more traditional tribal roots and create a homogenous sort of westernised system.
Well, yeah, that's the aim, because they want everyone to be the same in
exactly.
a way.
It's the monoculture.
Even though we're all different in our own special ways, they are trying to standardise everybody.
Yeah.
And they're doing that, obviously, through the TV, through the media, through the phones, through the tablets.
Yeah.
Anything you get through that, you even find elements in adverts. Mm.
So again, that's the Orwellian element of the word multiculturalism, because in truth, it's a movement towards one culture, monoculture.
Yeah.
So again, it's the upside down, it's the
back
deliberate,
to front, left
back
to right.
front, thinking. Yeah.
It's definitely a conspiratorial
There's an element.
Aspect going on there. Yeah. Even though we find that we've got these innate ability, well, it's not really ability, it's a drive.
Desire.
To be one of a group.
Yeah.
No one wants to feel alone.
Yeah. It's definitely been co-opted and subverted in order to serve the interests of the powers that be, I would suggest.
Yeah. But this is done in all cultures, throughout society, in a way of keeping the status quo.
Yeah, and I mean, some of the reasons why social conditioning occurs is in order to maintain a rigid social structure, to maintain hierarchical systems of control. And ultimately, all of those happen, as I said in the intro, to keep human consciousness suppressed, to keep us diminished, to not make us realise the divinity or true power of our being, and also to create, I like this quote from David Icke, to create the prison without bars.
Yeah, and it's really became our prison now.
Yeah.
But it's almost that time to see the prison for what it is and step outside of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Especially with this new drive of human consciousness awakening.
Yeah, sure.
Everything's almost coming to light, and everything's almost becoming more obvious.
So it might be interesting to consider what that means for each and every one of us in terms of individuals, and how can we go through the process of unprogramming ourselves, which is also, that's kind of like a key element of the spiritual path as I see it, in order to become conscious and escape the social condition.
Yeah, I like to phrase, can't remember where I heard it, but it goes like, it calls everything like that, mental malware.
Okay, explain that, Mike.
Well, on the computer, you get malware that kind of like installs itself into your system and starts...
So a form of virus?
Yeah. But not properly a virus, and they call it malware.
Yeah.
And what it's like is all these conditionings and codes that we've been getting in programs from society, from schools, from religion, from universities, from, you know, your friends, everything like that, all gets amalgamated into the mental malware. Control systems within ourselves, how we control ourselves.
Okay.
And the whole idea is to deprogram ourselves.
Get rid of the malware.
Yeah.
And come back to the truth of who we are.
Yeah.
And human existence, really.
Which at the end of the day, one of the most important questions in that is almost like, who am I?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a very important question to consider.
But I would say one of the best ways to try and deprogram yourself is almost through meditation.
It'd be good also to add at this point that in future episodes we will cover some of these points in greater detail, won't we, Mike? Like today, we would certainly talk about political correctness or multiculturalism in much greater detail.
Yeah, we just wanted to link in how they're all connected
into
this.
General themes.
Because there's so many elements within the social conditioning that goes on.
Yeah.
I think they all needed a little bit of a mention.
Yeah, to touch upon. And again, as we come towards the end of this episode, which has been really interesting, I have to say, Mike, is we welcome your contribution. Again, if you'd like us to talk about certain issues or there's things that are playing on your mind, then please contact us through our Discerning Consciousness Facebook page.
Yeah, brilliant to hear your feedback and views.
Yeah, okay.
One last thing I want you guys to think about is when it comes down to these social conditionings.
Yeah.
I want you guys to think about what still controls you and stops you living the life you want to live.
And what stops you giving full expression to the divinity of your being. Yeah, definitely.
So on that note, Have a good day.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.